All right, Mary Tippett is with us. Her book has just been released about the one of the most heartbreaking mine disasters in North American history, and it happened right here in the UP. Good afternoon to you, Mary.
Good afternoon, Jack. Great talking with you, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about the book. I'm excited about it.
Well, you put a lot of time into it, didn't you?
That is correct, and for me personally, it's been intensive work for 9 years now, but for my family and for many other families who have saved records and photographs and personal recollections and so forth, it's been 100 years of history going into this book, something that I think we can all really feel proud of.
Now, for people who are unaware of what I'm talking about, let's let you take a minute to describe which disaster, of course, we're talking about. What did happen?
Yes, on November 3rd, 1926, an iron ore mine a little bit west of Ishpeming in Michigan's Upper Peninsula suffered a cave-in. 51 men died in that tragedy, including my grandfather and my great-uncle, a mine captain, and the county mine inspector. One man escaped the flooding mine alive. It was my great-uncle, Rutherford Wills. The bodies of 10 men were recovered. 41 remain entombed in the mine. And over the decades, with fairly little information available to many of the families, there have been a lot of feelings of anguish and despair and anger and longing, in many cases, to know more about what happened and who these men were and who these amazing women were, because their names were never published. Their names occurred in the records and in on the death certificates and so forth, but they were never made public. So my quest has been for the names of as many people as possible who were involved in this tragedy, regardless of whether or not they lost someone. There were people who were present whose first-person eyewitness testimony was gleaned from the coroner's inquest. And so there's a very rich, rich tapestry of stories involved here.
Now, of course, there was no CNN, there was no Fox News, there was no cameras on every corner, and you know, technology back then, you couldn't, you know, when we had the situation down in South America, we knew every second of what was going on with that mine situation, right? Not so when you're going back as far as you are.
I'm so glad you asked that question, Jack. I happened to be sitting in my parents' living room when the rescue in Peru happened, and my dad and I didn't have to say anything about knowing that this was an echo. In fact, in 1926, there wasn't even radio. Radio didn't occur in the UP until 1931, so the only means of obtaining news was from newspapers, word of mouth, telegrams, and personal correspondence. And so there was a lot of mystery and a lot of misinformation, and the reporters who were thrust into this situation, the stories of their lives, really, were scrambling to obtain interviews and to get the newspapers published. In fact, on the afternoon of the tragedy, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the Daily Mining Journal, published in Marquette, had put an extra out onto the streets. And people were waiting in line outside the Mining Journal office in Marquette to obtain that paper. And thanks to my grandma's scrapbook, we have a copy of that story. That story, the extra that was published on November 3rd, was never included in microfilm. So thanks to the people like my Graham who kept records and kept scrapbooks, we have information that we can piece together to understand what happened to the people. And I must say, the people who have spoken with me, the descendants and others who have spoken with me over the last 9 years, have known so much more than they ever thought they did, because their grandmothers were the ones who carried the stories and their lives forward.
So as we start to close the interview here, Mary, tell me a little about the book and how people can obtain it, and what's your focus in it?
Ooh, that's a tricky question. The focus started with the name. It became broader than that as I learned more information. So there's background on kind of the milieu in 1926, what life was like. There's information about the people who investigated the accident. There's information about what came before and after. And the book is published by Modern History Press. It's available from the Modern History Press website, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the Michigan Iron Industry Museum in Negaunee has it, and the book is on its way to other book outlets. The paperback book is $27.95, and the hardcover book, $43.95, and the ebook is $7.95, and there's an audiobook also in the works.
Okay, well, Mary, thanks for your time. Anything else before we go that you'd like to mention to people that I didn't cover?
I hope that people will read the entirety of this book because the narrative unfolds from 8 o'clock in the morning, the day before the tragedy, all the way through to the present day. And it's tear-jerking and fact-filled at the same time and tells you what a large army of people were marshaled by the mining companies and the communities to render aid and support to these grieving families.